Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Get your motor running.
We're back at 12 after. Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for joining me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Whatever comes our way. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, as you know very well, those of you who've been listening to this show low these many years. And she joins us now to talk to us about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the marketplace and in the world today. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning.
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
It's exciting for you too, isn't it?
Oh, totally. Sorry, I meant to say that it's exciting for me too.
Yeah. There you go. at least you could read the cue cards I send you, Joan.
Yeah, I know. I really should do that.
Okay, Joan. I was going to talk politics, but we're actually going to talk about that in a minute. So I'll hold off on that. There was a little bit of politics to talk about today, but we'll hold off on that and talk. Let's get right into what's on the first page. And this is kind of interesting, Joan, because you say that it's going to be a borrower's market for getting money out of our banks. What's going on there?
Right, and I think that's interesting because I think on the surface you'd think, how is it going to be a borrower's market if the Fed has just started raising interest rates?
If you're a small business owner.
Well, that's why we're here, and that's why we're here to explain that to you.
If you're a small business owner, this is totally, this sounds like some kind of Never Neverland stuff.
Right.
Because small business
owners
really
don't
know about...
But it really isn't if you think through the analysis here.
Yeah, we don't know anything about...
We're saying that banks are going to be trolling for customers. They need them. They want small businesses because the concern about mortgage lending may be drying up a little bit, so those small business customers are going to look a lot more attractive.
Well, and... There are other reasons why they're looking attractive. I mean, the financial statements are looking better.
Right.
Profits are up for a lot of small companies. Cash flow is better. That's the main thing, Joan, is the cash flow. I mean, so many small businesses really, well, a lot of them didn't make it over the last 3 years or so since 2000.
That's right.
And even those that made it had a tough time with cash flow. One of the reasons was because business was off. But also because we had no pricing power, and we couldn't raise our prices, and so it really made our financial picture not look so attractive to banks.
That's right.
And so, but now here's something that that you guys point out is that I think is kind of interesting. You say that banks will absorb some of the upcoming interest rate hikes. What kind of wacky weed are you guys smoking up there?
Wouldn't you like
that.
Some?
Wow. Boy, I think we all need some of that, especially our bank.
Well, it stands to reason, though, if you've got a competitive environment, banks will feel they can't pass all of that increase onto their customers if they want to grab these customers away from the competition.
But, Joan, I've been in the marketplace for 30-plus years. I won't define how much the plus is. And I've never seen a bank absorb anything.
Hey, man, I don't research it. I just read what's on the page.
Well, whoever wrote that, I want to ask them if they've how much. That's probably the best example of me disagreeing with Kipling in my life. Banks don't absorb anything. Let me disabuse all of us of that option. God bless our banks; they're our best friends, but they don't absorb anything. They pass it right through. Did I offend you, Joan?
No. I don't know. Maybe competition. But like I said, I don't research them. I just read them on the page.
Well, now, I will tell you, here's where they might loosen things up a little bit. Typically, as you've heard me say before, Joan, small businesses don't live in the world of prime interest rates. We live in the world of prime plus.
Right.
Right now, prime rate is 4.25%. Always three points above the Fed funds rate, and so if most small business owners were going to the bank to borrow money, they would say, you know, what's my rate? And the banker would look at their financials and they'd consider the deal and they'd say, okay, they wouldn't say it like this, but this is what they're thinking. Okay, prime's at 4.25%, That's what it cost me for my money, perhaps, for some of my money. And that means that that I'm going to charge you 6.5. That's 2.25 above prime. Whereas maybe a year ago, they would have charged 3 above prime. So that might be where they're where they would ease up on things a little bit. Maybe, and what would make this statement about absorbing some of the interest, they might absorb it that way.
Well, you're just saying they would just take a smaller profit then.
They would. It means, here's the way I would say it. It means that they might charge small business owners a lower premium for being small business than they would have before. And that's where your competitive situation comes in.
Right.
That's where that happens.
Okay.
So maybe we're saying the same things, but the...
I think it sounds like you are, just slightly looking at it slightly differently, but you're basically saying the same thing.
It's just...
And the bottom line is the same, that small business owners would pay less than they might otherwise think they would.
It's just that the words banker and absorb just don't go together. It's like oil and vinegar.
You just rocked your world, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right about that. Okay, let's talk about... Joan, in the last hour... On down on the page there, you've got the HR bill. The stock option point that you make, that companies won't shy away from offering stock options. Are you familiar with the bill that passed the House this week on the stock?
Okay, now that this section is talking about issuing stock.
Right. All right. Well, tell us what it means then.
Well, I mean, maybe I'm reading it wrong. The way I read it, we're saying companies won't shy away from stock offerings. I think we're talking about IPOs here, initial public offerings.
Right.
In other words, they're going to be willing to come to market to offer equity deals so that investors can get in on them, even though there's been a lot of corporate governance rules that might have made companies shy away from going public.
Right. All right, and of course, this is just another way of getting another example of how companies can capitalize their growth. In addition to getting loans, it'll be interesting, Joan.
Right, because when you're a private company, you kind of get to the point where you kind of either have to make the next leap into a public offering or kind of stay where you are.
Well, there comes a point in every company's life when they're growing, and when their plan is to continue to grow, when they can no longer fund their growth from just banks.
Right. And now the interesting thing, and your listeners have heard us talk about the Sarbanes-Oxley corporate governance rules over the last couple of years.
Joan, hold
there
on.
There came
to
a point where
hold
some
on. Joan,
small
hold on to
public
that.
Companies
hold on to that.
Thought
no,
about going private
break.
Because of them.
We're going to get this sorted out here, folks, right after these messages. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. Stay with us.
A band is blowing Dixie, double ball.
Back at 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks for hanging around with me today. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, one of the things we're talking about banking, folks, with some of Kiplinger's suggestions on banking and on capitalizing our businesses. Joan, one of the things that I'd like to encourage people to do, while interest rates are still low, and folks, this little quarter point uptick in the interest rates, that's nothing. when you've still got prime, Joan, at 4.25, I mean, interest rates are still way, way low, historically low almost. And so I'd just like to encourage you run to your bank with your proposal to get anything that you've got financed at a higher rate renegotiated to a lower rate. And if you've got a real estate, a long-term loan, some kind of a term loan of anything, you know, like a 10 or 15 year real estate loan or 20 year real estate loan in your business, and it's at an old interest rate, you know, or maybe even a floating rate, lock in whatever you can right now as low. And I've been saying this now, Joan, as you know, we've been saying this for a couple of years, haven't we?
Absolutely.
So lock those rates in as best you can, because, you know, Joan, I don't know where it's going to go. I don't you think the Fed has learned their lesson? Don't we hope the Fed has learned their lesson from what they did in 99 and 2000?
Yeah, I sure hope so.
because, you know, back then, if, as you remember, they raised rates. How many times did they raise rates in a row? Like, what, was it 8 or 9 times or 10 times
in
a row?
It was quite a lot.
And so they raised those rates, and basically they spun the economy, in my opinion, they contributed to spinning the economy into a recession. And I don't think that they're, Joan, I don't think they're going to do that now, though. Do you?
Well, they just said yesterday that it might have to raise quickly.
Right. But, you know, raising rates another quarter point and doing it quickly, that's one thing. But that doesn't mean that they're going to set a practice of raising them every time they meet, every 6 weeks for the next several times. So I still believe, Joan, that we're going to be sitting here a year from now with prime still not more than 5%, 5% the most.
Okay, I'm writing that down.
You write it down. There you go. Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy a little bit, and you guys report that which is something that's good news, and that's that the economy's looking pretty positive right now, even though it may be slowed up a little bit recently. Overall, it's looking pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what we're saying here. I mean, I think it's kind of hard to tell sometimes from a lot of different things you're seeing in the papers about economic indicators. But we say that the slowdown is mainly in automobile and discount retail sales.
Right. Which are pretty good components of the pretty significant sectors of the marketplace, though, aren't they?
Right.
Yeah. Have you seen the rolling, what they call the rolling average graphs of how the economy's doing? Have you seen any of those?
No.
You know what I'm talking about, obviously, and those are pretty interesting. You know, in other words, they're not subject to the rolling average graph is not subject to the, you know, the fluctuations of one month or another. You know, it's like a 20-week rolling average or something like that. And I saw one of those a while back, and the economy is just on that rolling average, even with the new numbers that we're getting in right now, it looks pretty. It's still, you know, still trending upward.
Well, that's good news.
And so, you know, that's a lot better than doing than wringing our hands over what happened last month. One of the things, Joan, that happened last month was, and I guess maybe partially in July. Is it does look like the economy has softened a little bit, doesn't it, with hiring and everything?
Well, yeah, that's what I had been referring to. There are some indicators that show some softening, so I think there's some mixed signals out there.
Mm-hmm. I was reading one company's earnings report that's being announced today, and they were reporting a real nice earnings increase year over year. Right now, sales are up, profits are up, earnings are up. But the second half outlook was what they called cautiously optimistic. So I wonder what that means.
Well, at least it's not pessimistic.
You know what I think it means, Joan? You know, I'm going to try to stir a little controversy in here. I think it means they don't know which way the election is going to go, and who knows what will happen after that.
Could be.
What do you think?
Well, it could be.
Yeah. What do you think? How big a deal do you think the economy is going to be in the election this year, Joan?
Well, I guess the two big issues are the economy and the war on terrorism, and it'll be interesting to see which one is more important.
Well, and if we don't have any events between now and the election, and if Iraq continues to be replaced in the, you know, all Iraq all the time. On the news media, in the news media, the cable companies, the cable stations. If that goes away, then the economy will come, but will really kind of take the forefront, then, won't it?
Oh, I think so. Yes.
So we'll see how that works out. But now, when we come back, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about health costs, and Joan has some good numbers for us here on how things are going in the area of health care. I want to talk a little bit about HSAs, health savings accounts, and AHSPs, association health plans, right after these messages, 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am the smart. I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for hanging around with me. My website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, one of the challenges that folks have these days is paying for medicine. My mother and father are elderly. Your mother is elderly, and they're all taking expensive medicine. And my mother one time said to me, "Why, you know, this medicine is so expensive. I wish it, you know." She was complaining about the medicine being expensive, and I said, "Mom, what if you didn't have the medicine?" She said, "Oh, I wouldn't be here." And I said, "Well, okay, it may be expensive, but isn't it good that we have this?" And so that kind of made some sense. But now it looks like according to Kiplinger, a number of these expensive drugs that people have been taking that have really been lifesavers, they're about to lose their patents, aren't they?
That's right, and that means generics. And a lot of, if I'm looking at this list here, quite a few of these are rather popular, well-known drugs.
Big-name drugs.
Yeah, because you've got antidepressants, and I'm sure everybody's heard of drugs like Zoloft and Celexa. Prevacid's interesting. It's an ulcer fighter. I just had to purchase that for my mother, and it's extremely expensive. Couldn't believe it.
So over the next 3 years, apparently all of these, over the next 3 years, they're going to lose their patents, and that means that they're going to be available generically, right?
That's right. And I also wonder if eventually some of these could be offered over the counter because, for example, Prevacid, I don't know why, there's a similar drug called Prilosec that's over the counter now. So I don't know why Prevacid couldn't be as well.
Right. Well, and you know, Joan, as a business owner, as somebody who has to invest in new developments myself in my own little way, you know, I can't be, you know, people get mad at these drug companies because the cost is so high, and I don't know if they're gouging people. I have no way of knowing that. I know one thing, Joan. It seems to me, from what I've talked in talking to some of the people that I know who know about these things, the United States is one of the last places on Earth where they're, you know, where they can really do any kind of testing because they don't have price controls. The research
right,
and development.
Right, and of course, the drug companies would say, "How do you expect us to do research and develop the new drugs that you want if we can't charge a price that allows us to recoup these costs?"
Exactly. And see, from what I can understand, in Europe, for example, and I may be wrong about this, but the experts that I've talked to have told me this, that in Europe that they've got so much control over that, the companies over there aren't as able to fund the research and development as you were talking about.
That's right, exactly.
So, you know, we may not like the price, but we got to like the fact that they're there. Joan, another thing in the health front I want to talk about quickly is there's rising popularity in the gastric bypass surgery option. And I think this is interesting. And the reason I'm pointing this out is, do you know anybody who's had this surgery, by the way?
Oh, not personally, but I've certainly read a lot about people who have had it and, you know, even some celebrities who have had it.
Yeah. And a lot of people have had it with quite a bit of success, haven't they?
Well, that's true, but I was just talking to someone the other day. I don't know if it was, might have been you, but that's my, you
me.
Know, my I'm losing my mind here. That it doesn't always work, and it can be end up being reversed.
Well, I have heard that, and I didn't tell you that, but what I did tell you was that I saw a lady interviewed about this, and she said, you know, when I had the surgery, part of the regimen of dealing with of the post-operative regimen was that I could only eat a little bit of food quite a few times during the day. And she said, all of a sudden I realized if I had done that same regimen before I had the surgery, I would have lost the weight. I wouldn't have needed the surgery. So
I think it's amazing that people can't figure it out themselves. I guess the other thing that worries me is the cost. It's a very, what do we say, $25,000 per operation?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not trying to be judgmental, John, at all about anybody who would want to have this or need to have it. I just to me, her comment about, you know, what if I had just done what they wanted me to do postoperatively, preoperatively, I wouldn't have had to have the operation. And so, to me, that was a voice from the future, you know.
Well, you almost wonder if insurers would have to start instituting an education program. In other words, requiring people to try to do this on their own first.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks, Joan. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Joan Pride after these messages. When we come back, we're going to talk a little politics. You know, we got the convention coming up. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Talking just the other day. And they said you were going to put me on a shelf.
Back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, I'd like to remind you about their website, kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. It's a good site. You can go there. You can find out a lot of good stuff there for free. Just snoodle around on their site. And I think, though, when you do, you'll be encouraged to maybe motivated to check out their publications. And, of course, the Kiplinger letter is the one Joan and I work off of every week, and that's the weekly letter that's now in its 81st year in business. And Joan hasn't been with them quite that long, but close. That's the weekly letter, and then they have three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter, which comes every other week. And then they've got a monthly magazine. Joan, tell us about that one.
Yes, it's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And it's not only available on the website, it's available on newsstands. That one is. Joan, give us that phone number.
Right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
All right. And that's how you can subscribe and then still get a 30-day free trial, right?
Oh, no question about it.
Yeah. They're doing what they can to make sure that you're happy with your purchase. So check it out when you get a chance, folks. And just do yourself a favor and try the 30-day free trial on the Kiplinger letter. I know you're going to like that one. Joan, let's talk about politics. Now, coming up next week, this coming week, is the Democrat convention in, what, about a month, the Republican convention?
Right. Then I guess this is where I'm supposed to yawn.
Yeah. Does anybody care?
I think true believers care. Maybe that's about it. Because, you know, years ago, conventions, there was actually some mystery and suspense about who was going to get nominated.
There's no drama here, is there?
Right. Well, that's because of the primary system.
Right, but is that what's changed? Is that what's caused this to change now? That tell us how the primary system has altered this.
Well, you used to have candidates nominated at the convention, and instead of now, where you have primaries where the voters tell the delegates how to vote, basically.
Yeah, but didn't they have primaries 40 years ago?
I wasn't born then, was I? Let's see, was I born 40 years
primaries,
ago? Just barely.
I guess,
just
I guess
barely.
Maybe I didn't realize it. Are primaries new?
I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't think they were, but I do know that they front-load them in the year so much that, you know, get them all loaded up in the early part of the year a long time before the convention, so that now, by the time the convention comes around, it's pretty much a fait accompli, isn't it?
Well, are you saying that some of the primaries occurred after the conventions?
Well, I don't know. No, I don't think they occurred after the convention. But my point is that the momentum is given is so early to one person typically, and of course I don't know. It just seems to me that, well, here's my question. At this point in time, couldn't they almost phone this in?
Oh, sure. This is really just a big 4-day pep rally.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
To rally the base and maybe to try to, and maybe, of course, the one coming up is basically another opportunity for Bill Clinton to be in front of the public again, right?
But ironically, I'm sure both parties want to run these things just to get publicity now, but they're getting less and less because the networks are covering them less and less.
Well, and even, that's an excellent point. I mean, the coverage is going to be much less this year, isn't it?
Right.
I think
that each network is allotting a total for the week of 3 hours, so that's probably about an hour a night.
And I remember in the 60s, Joan, when I was kind of watching these things, really the early 60s and beginning in the early 60s, when I started watching these things a little bit as a kid, I remember, it was like wall to wall. There was some drama. There was some controversy involved. And, you know, Joan, the thing about it is the only thing less dramatic than the Democrat convention is the Republican convention.
Yeah, right.
I mean, what is there to decide?
Yeah, because we've seen these guys already 4 years ago.
Right.
There's
exactly.
Nothing new
so,
there.
Anyway, that'll be interesting. But now, one of the things that could make the Democrat convention interesting is how much the Sandy Berger thing, that's the news, the breaking news sort of this week, how much the Sandy Berger thing could sort of become a little bit of a taint on the Democrat convention. Do you think that has a chance of doing that?
No. I mean, and you can write that down and tell me I'm wrong later. That's how convinced I am. I don't think the American people really are paying attention to this. Maybe they will. You know, maybe there's some reason to make this a bigger deal, but I doubt it.
The former National Security Advisor to Clinton, Sandy Berger, is being investigated right now for having taken and misused some confidential, classified files, right?
Right.
Did I say that correctly?
I think so.
And
I don't know a whole lot about this.
But it's going to be interesting to see how this works out. Joan, let's move on down and talk about oil and gas prices. Now, you guys say they're going to be high through the fall at least. What about after
that? At least. Well, and that's a little ironic since OPEC had been willing to ratchet up production. But the demand is so high, it's just not going to be enough.
Right. No, that's right. And Joan, I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, and I've said this before. You've heard me say it. Folks, get used to it. You know, the days of dollar a gallon gasoline, the days of $1.50 a gallon gasoline, I think are not in our future. And if it is, Merry Christmas. You got a little gift. And the reason I'm saying this, folks, is don't be naive about this. You need to budget in your financial budgets. You need to budget for higher gasoline prices, higher fuel prices. If they're going to be with us for a while, I'm convinced of that. 10 till, we'll be right back with Joan Pride. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blassingame, Small Business Advocate. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we got Bill Hubbard, who's going to join us. He's our human resources expert. Andrew Shearman is going to join us. He's one of the guys who helps us understand how to fund the growth of our business. We talked a little bit about that today with Joan Pry, but Andrew will be talking about that with us. That's coming up in the show straight ahead. Also, we've got Nancy Michaels with us in the show straight ahead. She's going to be talking to us about marketing in your small business. Nancy's a pro in the area of marketing. I'm looking forward to getting her back on the show. A lot of good folks lined up for you all the rest in the coming days ahead. We've got Steve Moore, we've got Kate Kelly, we've got Rosalind Glickman. And by the way, folks, with the convention coming up, I'm going to be in the show straight ahead during the convention week, I'm going to be having several people who are political operatives on the show, including at least working on at least one person to be on the show, and not sure who that's going to be yet, who's going to be at the convention. So we're going to try to cover that, and we got several folks. By the way, next Thursday, Steve Forbes is going to be back on the show. Looking forward to getting him back on. Joan, let's move over to Joan Pride, by the way, folks, is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Let's move over to page four and talk about Iraq. Kind of, it's still in the news, but not exactly the way it was a month and a half ago, is it?
How do you mean?
Well, it doesn't, you know, everything was so breathless and needed to be covered immediately to the nth degree right up to the 1st of January of July. But now they're covering it, but it's not quite as breathless. What do you think?
Well, I thought it was sort of breathless yesterday, now that we've got a whole bunch more hostages being taken.
Well, I'm not saying that's not important. I'm not saying that's not something that we should
darn
be
important.
Concerned about. I'm just saying that to hear the way the news media is covering Iraq is what I'm talking about. It just seems to me not to be quite as breathless as they were, but they're.
I think the Bush administration was also pretty breathless, talking, you know, going on and on about the handover on June 30th. So I think we all, you know, kind of bought into that.
Okay. So how do you see Iraq right now after the handover? Do you see things moving in a good direction or not, in your opinion?
Well, I guess yes and no. I mean, they're trying to move in a good direction, but you still have a lot of problems with the insurgency that they have to try to stop.
I guess
as they're still trying to develop the infrastructure, which was so badly destroyed under Saddam and during the war.
Mm-hmm. I guess one thing that I'm noticing is whenever they have an attack, and there's one over there every other day, it seems, so the attacks haven't maybe diminished, but the attacks are now primarily on Iraqis. Have you noticed that? I mean, you don't hear about U.S. Service folks getting hurt or killed like we were.
Oh, really?
That's
I thought I had noticed that. I thought we just had a Marine killed a couple days ago.
Well, I'm not saying that there aren't none of it's happening. I'm saying that it's not the same degree. More of the attacks are on Iraqis, not so much on Americans.
Oh, okay.
Forces. That's what I'm seeing. I'm paying attention to this thing every day and. Pretty much.
Because all the hostages that were just taken were all foreigners.
That's right. And see, you know, what the Philippines did, what the Philippine government did, is such a dumb thing for them to do. You
know,
they pulled their troops out 20 days in advance. Do you know what country on the planet Earth has more people working as expatriates in countries where there are terrorists? Nobody has
no,
more
I don't.
Than the Philippines.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's huge. You go to any Middle Eastern country, the people who are doing the manual labor and most of the work there, many, many, many of them are Philippines.
Well, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Well, and are Filipinos. And so for the government to do that, to set that precedent, I know they saved that man's life, we think, but still... We can't give in to terrorists like that. Would you agree?
Oh, no question about it. It's really scary. If you start doing that, then where does it end?
That's exactly right. And so I'm really disappointed that they did that. That was a big mistake. Joan, thank you for being here. And
well,
for
thank
doing
you, Jim.
What you do with us.
It's well, can I come back next week?
Well, if you behave yourself, I'll give you one more chance.
Well, then I guess I won't be back.
Give us your website one more time before you go.
Sure, it's www.kiplinger.com.
All right. Thanks, Joan. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Jim.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military standing a post around the world on our behalf, on behalf of freedom, on behalf of liberty. God bless you, everyone. We are proud of you, everyone. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.